The Around the League podcast is a Pop Warner sensation.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the League podcast. My name is Dan Hanses, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Chris Wesseling, Mark Sessler, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Yo.
How you doing?
What is happening? It's Wednesday. Hump day. Kill me.
We just broke some big news right before the podcast started.
Oh, yeah.
The Around the League crew, all four of us. Unfortunately, Kevin Patrick will not be able to go, but the four in this room right now will be descending upon Manhattan for Super Bowl, whatever number it is this year.
That is great news. That's a boss move right there.
I was just thinking, I hope he uses the phrase descending upon, because that's exactly, we're like a plague of locusts taking over the city.
So we're going to go remote for the ATL podcast for that, I would think.
Oh, right? Yeah. We should be able to get some good guests, maybe. Well, we don't really like having guests, though, because they just take up our airtime. Yeah, anyways.
Plus, we're kind of like outsiders, just, you know, seeing the view from the outside. We're not sucked into the corporate machine. We only work for the corporate machine.
Last year they brought, I think it was two semi-functioning like lavalier mics, so we're going to need to up the equipment in hall.
There was, yeah, that was by far the worst ATL debate club, was the one live from the Super Bowl, but it's going to be different this year. I'm excited about it. We're all excited, but let's talk some football, and we'll start. We very rarely do we talk about the Monday night game, because I know by the time many of you listen to it, it's already Thursday, but we're going to talk about it, but we're going to more spin forward. We're going to talk about what it means. And the Carolina Panthers, Greg, I got on your side. You and I both picked the Patriots. They almost pulled it out. Very controversial ending, but the Panthers came out of it with the 24-20 win. Greg, I guess I'll open with you on this. What does this game mean for both teams? Give me some big picture macro takeaways.
Well, you guys know I've been very optimistic about my Patriots all season. I picked them to make the Super Bowl. I've stuck by that, and I feel better about them after that game than I have all year, because I wanted to see if that game against Pittsburgh was a fluke, or is their offense really back? They did whatever they wanted on offense against the Panthers. Their shortest drive was 8 plays. They had 390 yards in 7 drives. Their defense obviously has problems. They came up short in a tight game against the top 5 team, but I actually feel better about them now than I have at any point this season.
I was more impressed with the Patriots in that loss than I was in any win this year.
I agree.
They were going against the number one defense in the NFL, as far as I'm concerned, and they moved the ball up and down the field the whole game. I just thought, you know, that was more impressive even than the Steelers game to me.
They protected Brady well. I was surprised. He just looked, I mean, maybe it's, we shouldn't be so surprised. You get Gronkowski, Ridley's on the field more, Amendola's healthy, and Vereen was a huge difference maker, and suddenly they look a lot different.
Well, when they let Welker go, the plan wasn't to simply put a bunch of newbies, untested mystery players onto the field. This was the plan, what we're getting right here, and not unlike Seattle with Percy Harvin, and I guess to a lesser degree, we'll see how healthy he is, Michael Crabtree at some point coming back for the Niners. This is a Super Bowl contender getting some premier players back.
It's the first time all year I thought the Patriots looked like a Super Bowl contender.
It all, you know, they're a different team in November and December. You just got to have faith. I mean, a lot
Wait,
of
did they win the game, by the way?
No,
what
I know.
Am I missing
we're
here?
Losing.
No, no, but that,
well.
You know what? If you want to
talk about a positive loss,
though, this was that for New England, because they were
You tell
firing.
Bill Parcells about positive losses.
Listen, I mean, honestly, Brady looked better in this game than he has all year, I thought.
Well, Wesseling after the game was talking up Cam as a potential MVP candidate, so we know he's lost his marvels.
Let's parse that language. Said he was in the discussion of alternatives to Peyton Manning, because it's clearly Peyton Manning.
Yeah, after I talked you down from calling him MVP candidate.
Hey, look, I'm under orders from my boss Greg Rosenthal to do away with bland headlines such as Panthers beat Patriots.
Oh, well,
so
true.
I had to do something else.
The best, by the way, was during this game, to me it was the game of the year, Wes and Greg were on one spot of Washington Boulevard in Culver City, and then a half mile down, Mark and myself were at the Joxers Daily Pub.
Oh, I didn't know that. We could have worked from Joxers.
Listen,
it's not how it works.
You know, having a few beers, I had some wings that made me sick the next day, but, you know, we don't care about that. But there was this these two different endings for the ATL crew, and I will say, watching from that bar, that was the game of the year. And you tweeted it, Mark, and I tweeted the same thing that that was, and a lot of people got upset about that Cowboys and
they
the Broncos
got really
game.
Upset about that. The part I didn't
everybody.
Understand what
it was definitely over. The game of the year. From minute one to the end, it was tense. It was great. I mean, I thought you were right on the money saying that there was so much up and down, different strategy. Even before that ending, I thought it was the game
of
the year.
I think people like that Cowboys-Broncos game where, you know, almost 100 points are scored or whatever. I think this was the game that if you like defense and a little offense, you got everything here.
This game was so good, it turned my man Dan Handis into a Patriots fan. I've been noticing a little trend lately.
Well, he was openly rooting for Tom Brady in that bar, weren't you? Not
well, I picked them to win.
But
in our
it was hard to root against Brady down the stretch.
All right, I have some evidence here that speaks to it was more than just picking them in that game. Dan Handis tweet at 8:32 Pacific, November 18th, Super Bowl rematch, please, from the Jets fan.
That's Dan with a potentially a full pitcher of beer in his belly. I wouldn't. It doesn't count.
There was some beer, but I listen.
That puts it into context.
It actually puts into context how down I am on the Jets now that I can't even like. Even as a Jets fan, I can only think of real teams that come January, and I don't think the Patriots will get picked off in the playoffs like they always seem to be. That always seems to happen now, but that would be fun. These teams are two very even matched teams. Now, one other question I have about this game. So are we now – I know we all love the Panthers in this room, but are the Panthers the best team in the NFC? Are they that good? Could they beat the Seahawks on the road in a big spot in the playoffs? Are they that good?
Could they?
Yeah.
Yes. I think if you have a good defense and you have Cam Newton as a magician, even though Greg Olsen won't call him that anymore, but the way he escapes the pocket, the way he's improving, he has a – passer rating over 111 in four of the last six games. They're talking now that he is – Rivera gave him so much credit for changing plays at the line of scrimmage, changing out of passes into runs and vice versa. They said he showed so much leadership on that final drive. He's come up – he came up with three huge drives in that game. If he really has – and I don't know if he has advanced to the point where this is going to be a consistent thing because like Greg says, he makes four or five throws a game where you just scratch your head and say, what the heck was that? But if Cam can do that and they have that defense and you keep it close, they could win. I don't know if any other team in the NFC can beat the Seahawks in Seattle.
I'm not willing to concede that Seattle's number two at this point because I look at that team.
Whoa. I didn't say Seattle was number two.
He's saying, is it potentially Carolina number one? I would say no in the sense that Seattle has gotten to where they are with more than half their offensive line gone.
We called them a top five team a couple weeks ago. So they go on the road to beat San Francisco. They beat New England. I want to ask, though, when it comes to Cam Newton, is he really that much better than he was last year than he is this year? Or is it just the fact that the defense is awesome? And Cam Newton's been pretty good the whole time. I think he's been close to a top 10 quarterback the whole time. And then we're just putting all these narratives and leadership and blah, 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 because they're winning games.
It's a good question. And I thought about that we said earlier in the year, he's basically the same quarterback as he was when he entered the league. He hasn't developed. And I think if you're going to answer that he has developed, it's the stuff that we can't know about. It would be the stuff that the teammates and the coaches know, that he is changing plays at the line of scrimmage, that he is reading defenses better, that he is making better choices, and that in times where the game is on the line, which was the criticism of him in the first 2 years in the league, they don't win close games. Now, 2 weeks in a row, they do win close games.
I think he's incrementally better. I asked that question, by the way, of course, because I wanted to answer it. Podcast trick.
It's a life trick for Greg.
I think he's incrementally better, but the offense isn't any better. They're not a better offense than they were a year ago. They're one of the last teams. I think they're dead last in explosive plays, and they were towards the top last year. They're more consistent, but they're conservative. I think he's a little better as a player. They're not any better as an offense.
I agree, and I think a big part of that is Steve Smith doesn't have the legs he did a year or two ago.
Felt dirty, by the way, rooting for the Patriots.
You're rooting for the rematch, and that was a great Super Bowl, Panthers, Patriots. Do it again.
First of all, you have to factor in that I'm an idiot. So that plays into effect. But also the beer, the domestic beer. Hey, K-Rich, I know you got upset because we're talking about these NFC powerhouses, but the Eagles didn't come up. So you, obviously for you, it's Eagles number one, Seahawks two, Panthers three, correct?
No, not correct.
All right.
Because we still have some building to do. Maybe next year.
I like that. Maybe number one in the NFC.
I'm just being real.
Wait. Mark actually had a vision about the Eagles, didn't you? You had a dream. You told me this morning. It was a little blurry because it was 6 in the morning. It was some sort of vision. Or am I combining memories? Something about the Eagles in a dream.
Was it a Nick Foles head injury prediction?
No, I couldn't. I think I woke up in the middle of the night last night, and I had like... There we go. I looked over number one, and I had like my one-year-old son like right smushed up against my face. But it went into this like idea that maybe the Eagles are the team that could get so hot that they roll into the playoffs at like 8-8 or 9-7 and mow down three straight teams right into the Super Bowl.
Greg,
and then I regained consciousness.
You got to give Greg. You got to give Mark a vacation. You gotta let him get away.
His beautiful young son comes to his face,
and he doesn't think about, wow, you know, how much of a joyful life I have that this beautiful thing is mine and it came from me. No, it's like, the Eagles, they can go on a run potentially.
Say the Eagles sneak into the playoffs, and the playoffs are essentially unpredictable. Now, I'm not saying we're the best in the NFC East because there's the Seahawks, there's the Saints who are 8-2. I don't think we're number one, but there is a possibility that we could get there.
Well, I mean, something weird could happen with that team. That team's strange.
Wait, so Mark, was this related to or unrelated to the dream where you have a ticket to Australia and yet you still have your wife and stuff and you're not sure if you're supposed to get on the plane?
No, I've had that dream a million times. I'm not going to waste all the time with
that. Simone does not know about the dream.
No, I've talked to her about it. I am at the airport. And when I was 20, I went to Australia. So it's the same scene of when I actually went in real life. And I have a non-refundable ticket. So even if I don't go, we're already out the money.
Might as well go.
So I'm like, do I just get on the plane and go for a week, or do I not go? And I was having this long narrative last night, and all these like backpackers about to get on this flight, and I didn't go.
Quite the conundrum.
Are you wearing like matching sneakers, like tennis shoes, in the stream?
I'm like fit in it. Like I'm summered. I'm tan. You know, I have no thoughts or worries.
All right, great. K-Rich, what's in the news?
Gotta love it.
K-Rich on the headlines.
All right.
Bonkers sacks.
That was some bonkers sacks. Okay, Rich, what is in the news today?
All right, first up, the Raiders will stick with Matt McGloin at quarterback. And is this the end of Terrell Pryor's reign?
McLovin.
You called it first on Sunday.
Look, the guy came out, and we said he's throwing darts all over the field. He looked composed, poised in the pocket, made great decisions, knew the offense. Looked like the poor man's Jeff Garcia that they said he was.
I found it, like, before the game even started, Mike Silver has a report on Sunday morning saying that the Raiders are prepared to stick with the hot hand. So it seemed like they had already set the table for McGloin, for him to take over entirely. I mean, Pryor's not looked good in weeks. He's not the hot hand. He's not even on the field. It seems like they've been planning this for a while. They've liked him all season.
If you remember, even before the season started or when Pryor was right about the season was just getting going, there was a report, I think it was from Rappaport, which was that the Raiders weren't comfortable internally with this decision to have Pryor even starting. So it doesn't sound like, obviously it was Al Davis's last draft pick. So I think, you know, there was some sentiment there, but at the same time, I don't think the organization was ever all in on Pryor to start with.
No,
he didn't give him any choice. I don't care how good Terrell Pryor has looked this year. McGloin played so well. There was no decision to be made. I think he played a better game than any game Geno Smith or E.J. Manuel's played this year.
I agree.
I almost think the Jeff Garcia thing isn't giving him enough credit. Not that he couldn't have a great... I mean, Jeff Garcia had a great career, but his arm wasn't that bad. He had a couple passes down the field, 50 yards outside the number that were right on the money. Jeff Garcia wasn't making those throws. He had a great three quarters. Didn't play in the fourth quarter, but, I mean, he was outstanding.
You know, Casserly went to Raiders training camp and back in September said, bar none, he has the best arm of anyone in camp.
McLovin?
Yeah. He said that way back then. And I guess, I don't know, it just shows how quickly things can change at quarterback. Because a month ago we were saying there's no better athlete on the field than Terrell Pryor. He's able to take over a game doing X, Y, and Z. But he's not a complete quarterback. And if they come out of this having found one, What a coup d'etat for Reggie McKenzie, who otherwise has made a number of mistakes.
It reminds me of the Tebow debate, the prior debate in the Raiders front office. The football lifers, the scouts, there are going to be guys who never will get on board with a quarterback who is a runner first, passer second. And Pryor doesn't do a lot of things that quarterbacks in the NFL need to do as far as reading at the line of scrimmage, passing, making decisions in the pocket. And I'm betting that certain people in that front office will never see him as the guy.
McGloin wasn't even invited to the scouting combine. I mean, that is a pretty...
He was a walk-on.
He was a walk-on at college, but he wasn't even invited, and he's a rookie. That's about as big an underdog story as you're going to find.
But we should be careful, because we could 3 weeks from now say completely different things about this player.
Yeah, it was one game. All, you know? I mean is he played so well, he had to play a second.
All right, and Mark, don't think I missed coup d'etat. That's a three-point nice. Word. Well played.
All right, guys.
Well, it is the week that Kennedy was assassinated, so.
Nice.
Nice Kennedy joke. Nice.
Boom.
I'm not sure
nice
it was
connection.
A crumbling society.
Nice
if
connection.
I may interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead, Carrie. Yes.
Next up, Ed Reed. He's back at it. The Houston Texans defensive coordinator, Wade Phillips, he said that he's probably the reason he's not with the Texans anymore.
JFK killed by a Texan.
Wow.
We don't know that.
Greg, you predicted it last week that Ed Reed was going to say something, but you kind of, I think, meant more about the Jets and turning that into a circus situation. But this is more a callback to his doomed Houston Texans tenure.
Speaking of circus situations, the Houston Texans.
Yes. Right, and he talked about, I thought the most interesting thing Reed said was, that defense didn't fit me, you know, talking about Ed Reed, and it doesn't fit a lot of people in that locker room, and they know it. That's the truth. So it spoke to some, which is surprising because it's a great defense. But
that's fit them last year.
That's peculiar because Wade Phillips came in and maximized most of his talent last year.
I have my theory. Ed Reed is used to being the smartest guy in the defensive meeting room, you know, probably being kind of the coach on the field, and he probably didn't like that Wade Phillips was that guy.
What else is in the news, K. Rich?
All right, guys. Last up, Baltimore Ravens fans will be glad about this. Dennis Pitta returned to practice today.
I don't know what to make of this because when we see players activated off the PUP list, today was the last day they had to make this decision or else he goes on season-ending IR. We've seen guys be activated from the PUP list and return to practice and are still 4 weeks away from playing. This is more of a procedural move, I think.
Right, and if they don't – listen, I mean, it would be in theory, if Baltimore is going to make a run here at some sort of a wild card berth, Pitta would be a great addition for an offense that sorely missed him. But if he's not going to come back for 3 weeks or so, they could be long gone by then.
Well, and if you just want to be optimistic, let's say he is feeling great. And I did see a tweet that he seemed to be moving well today. Who knows what
he's
any of this means at this point.
He's been working out since
last month. Right, so if he did come back and could make an impact, that's huge for a Ravens team that – has missed him sorely in the red zone. Joe Flacco has obviously struggled at times this year. So we don't know what to make of that, but it's a promising development.
I'll never
forget
writing a post about Ed Dixon becoming their move tight end. It's like,
move
give
tight
me a
end.
Break.
That was one of my takeaways from watching Game Rewind again this week. If ever you thought Ed Dixon was going to make a catch in traffic with a defender within 4 feet of him, it's never going to happen.
He has 12
catches.
He
drops everything that like is slightly contested.
Well, I feel like we knew that by week quarter three of the Thursday night opener, where he was just absolutely dreadful.
We did. It was just reinforced to me.
Stick a fork in him.
All right, that is our theme for the stick a fork in him segment of our podcast, where we officially end a team's hopes of making the postseason, basically telling them, why are you even here at this point? You're a joke to us. Well, maybe not that strong, but you're not going to make the playoffs. You're not playing in January. So this will be a big one. We're going to have multiple teams being forked today. We're at that time of the year, so let's get going. Here lies the Houston Texans. I don't feel quite comfortable with this narrative device, considering the uncertain health of their head coach. Still, they can take into the afterlife the knowledge that Chris Wessling never stopped believing.
I stopped believing in the third quarter of Sunday's game when Gary Kubiak was so tone deaf to his entire fan base who only wanted to see if Case Keenum could possibly be the answer, and they were done with Schaub a month ago.
That was so
weird. He was so tone deaf to their wants and needs that he pulled a quarterback who wasn't playing badly in favor of a quarterback who has played worse than any quarterback in the NFL this season.
That felt to me because there's obvious questions about whether Kubiak will be back next season. Unlikely. Likely.
I don't think there's any question anymore.
And
he's
we
gone.
Know Schaub won't. So it was a nod to the guy that he kind of rose up there with. But it was very strange. And you talk about not giving what the fans want. I think he lost the locker room potentially a little bit with that move.
If this was an old Western movie, they would both be railroaded out of town.
It was insane. I mean, Rashad Jennings and Rod Streeter and McGloin is crushing your defense. Andre Johnson drops a wide open third down catch. Garrett Graham fumbles a ball. And then you bench Keenum, who's been the best thing about this team over the last month, who is not having a bad game. And Schaub made more bad throws in his first three drives than Keenum made the whole game before that.
How comfortable do we feel with the idea that the Texans can basically put this season behind them and be a contender again this time next September?
Well, look at it this way. Look who they play this week. The Jaguars. This could be for the number one overall draft pick. To me, the question is, do we use the final six games to see if Case Keenum is the guy? Because you could be drafting the best quarterback in the draft.
That's a big decision and that even it adds more to the baffling notion of why would you pull Keenum out when you need as much time to see what this guy is. But maybe Kubiak's not thinking.
Well, unless you're not going to be the guy to go forward with Keenum or anyone else in Houston.
Kubiak's been there so long and has a very specific offensive system that it's a total rebuild, and whatever Keenum does well might not really fit the next coach. And it's going to be tough for this team to be a contender right away again. They have a lot of pieces, but can the new coach keep Wade Phillips? Because if they don't, then it's starting over on defense too, and that's tough.
Here lies the Washington Redskins, a team that sincerely believed having RG3 ready for week one was the biggest problem they'd ever face. Is Mike Shanahan's face red in heaven?
Well, we were afraid to fork the Redskins at 3-6 because last year, that's exactly when we forked them in print, and they came back and they got us. And the Red Cross benefited because people don't know. If we get any of these wrong, we're going to donate money to the charity of our reader's choice. Last year, I donated to the Red Cross. We will also never do the segment ever again if we get any wrong. So there's
sure
a lot at stake.
80 cents to the Red Cross probably didn't make a major difference.
Some people
triple
make quiet
figures.
Donations and you never hear about it. We've been told about Greg's donation to the Red Cross a month for about 2 years now.
We got to tell the people what's at stake.
Anyway.
What a depressing team. You say we didn't want to fork them, and I understand that we have to be unanimous, but I haven't seen a whole lot from the Redskins that wouldn't have allowed me to make this decision a couple weeks ago.
To me, that Vikings loss a couple weeks back was the one where I was like, okay, this team is different than last year. There was no magic. And really, that's the only reason they were able to make them. It was a magical run to get them in where RG3 was going off. And I know we've talked about RG3 played well against the Vikings in that bad loss. But again, he was back to his old tricks this past week, and he's catching a lot of heat this year. It's been a really, really tough year for this guy, both in terms of his physical play and how he's perceived. He went from the darling that seemed like the future face of the NFL to a guy that seems to be ripe to be taken down by anybody at this point about his attitude and how he carries himself.
He's 23, 24 years old. We saw a huge difference this week in how Eli Manning and Tom Brady reacted to horrible interceptions. Eli Manning said, that's what happens when you make a bad throw. I threw it to the other team. Tom Brady said, I made a bad throw to end the game. Robert Griffin III said, well, my guys couldn't get open. I had to throw off my back foot. You saw what happened. He'll learn not to do that kind of thing, and he won't take as much heat, but he's so young right now.
And it's not chronic. We've only seen a few moments like that from him. He's been a pretty good teammate, right?
Right, and I think that all gets overblown when you're winning. We don't talk about that. When you're losing, it gets magnified. But that story, I'm not usually into the leadership type of stories, but it's interesting how that bubbled up, that it was reported that basically on CSN that Griffin got a protection wrong on that call. on that play, he made the wrong protection call, which ruined the whole play. And then some teammates heard those quotes, and they didn't appreciate it because it made it sound like we weren't getting open when they knew he made a mistake on that play. And that's why Santana Moss winds up talking to the press, and then he backs off from it. I don't think all that stuff mattered. I just wonder, is Shanahan here next year?
Let me take a guess at this situation.
What?
Shanahan has 1 year left on his contract. He's going to lose any kind of power struggle with RG3. To me, Shanahan returns for 1 year. They don't extend him. Mm. They say, if you want to get in the Hall of Fame so bad, here's the pressure. Go win this year. To me, he does want to get in the Hall of Fame, and this is his last chance. He has to prove he can do it without Elway and Terrell Davis. This is his last chance. Let him dangle for a year. Let him do it. And maybe he has to fire Jim Haslett.
I have a theory on Shanahan, which is that he took this job not quite with the same amount of gusto that he would have been coaching earlier in his career. It was a lot of money, and he sets up his son with an offensive coordinator job. And I don't know if you ever looked at the assistants on offense on that team.
They're young.
They're all younger than us. They're all Kyle Shanahan's buddies.
Are you saying this is like a frat party?
I'm just saying, I don't know if Mike Shanahan's quite as
invested
as he was early in his career.
We'll be hearing from the Redskins.
Another interesting theory from Greg.
All right, next.
You guys love it.
Guys, show some respect. Here lies the Tennessee Titans, who took the human form of a girl that flirts with you all night at the bar, only to leave at 2 a.m. with the dude with the stupid motorcycle.
True enough.
Ryan Fitzpatrick kind of looks like that dude, though.
He did. I thought about that somehow.
I don't think Fitzpatrick's getting on any motorcycle.
He's got the big beard. He's
but since that analogy probably makes no sense to 96% of the people listening, just they kind of reeled in a lot of us. Especially, I remember, you know, when Jake Locker was laying it on my Jets, and they looked great. I think they were 3-1, and then he got back, and it seemed like, okay, maybe we'll make a run. And now he's back out, and maybe they've had some bad games. They're just not the team. You know?
This team went, I think, the first 4 weeks without a turnover. They played solid football, and in a way, kind of like the Chiefs, where if you're going to do nothing wrong for 10 weeks, yeah, you're going to go 8-2, 9-1 in this league. Tennessee then started to show cracks, and then for the umpteen year in a row, they lose Jake Locker, and I think they've got a ton of questions going into the offseason.
I feel totally confident in this fork, even though I picked the Titans to win this weekend against another team that we forked, the Raiders. Both of those teams are 4-6. They're only one game out of the playoff spot. What about the Titans made you guys confident in forking them and not all these other 4-6 teams?
It's more about what the Titans don't have, which is any kind of identity. What you've said it. What do they do well? They're mediocre on offense, they're mediocre on defense, and they have a backup quarterback.
And at this point, you've got to ask, if you are Munchak and you're still around after the season, another guy, a lot of these teams were forking, big coaching questions. But secondly, do we actually have a quarterback in Jake Locker unless we're going to invest heavily in someone that can come in and play six games? And are we tired of forming the offense around Chris Johnson?
And they have a big decision to make. Rap Sheet reported a couple days ago, you know, Locker has a lot of money coming his way.
I reported that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I reported that 2 days before Rap Sheet.
Chris Wessling stepping up with the reporting, not just an aggregator.
Yeah, like I reported that.
Yeah. Well, then you explain it to the people.
Ian's always trying to take your credit.
I know. Well, he's under contract for next season at just over $2 million, but the Titans have to decide right before the draft whether to pick up his 2015 option, which is approximately $13 to $15 million. So they have a huge decision they have to make by then. And that isn't the only decision. To me, Munchak's probably gone. Bud Adams is no longer the owner. They have new ownership there. They probably want to bring in their own guy. He's already said he wants to establish a very aggressive identity. The new owner has said that. It sounds like they want a different guy in there, and I think they have huge decisions at quarterback, head coach, and Chris Johnson.
I don't think it's a decision with Chris Johnson.
He's
it would
gone.
Be insane if they brought Chris Johnson back. I thought it was crazy that they brought him back this year at that salary, considering what he's been doing. I think 20 to 25 teams wouldn't have even thought about cut him last year. Forget it.
They want a defense, ball control, aggressive mentality. Chris Johnson is the worst running back in the NFL if you want a ball control offense.
He's due $8 million, or he's due $8 million next year.
That's not going to happen.
Yikes.
You got Sean Green. Your problems are over.
All right. So those are our three fork teams this week. And now I just jotted it down, and tell me if I missed anybody. Our fork teams so far as we head towards Thanksgiving: the Texans, the Redskins, the Titans, the Raiders, the Jaguars, the Falcons, the Bucks, the Vikings, the Rams. Did I get them all?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I'm looking
at those. The teams know, though, I can tell you that, because they've already packed up the trucks, and right. It's basically there's no practices anymore.
Mayflower?
They just go to Dave and Buster's.
Down. They've shut down.
The Browns
still living. Still living. Big game this week.
We've got a fork off between the Browns and Steelers. Well, I guess some of you don't think the Steelers, if they lose this game, they're still alive in your minds. I think whoever loses that is done.
I think the Steelers are prohibitive favorites for the number six seed.
We got a new segment. There's no segment music for it. K-Rich might... That might be another task for K-Rich to have to deal with.
Not yet.
This one's called, What's Wes Watching on His Day Off?
Well, I felt like I had some penance to do for my anti-EJ Manuel column on Saturday when I said Geno Smith has been the better of the two rookie quarterbacks. And mm-hmm. probably Mike Glennon's been better than both of them.
I like this accountability. You don't see this a lot in this room.
Well, I appreciate that. So I went back and watched the Jets-Bills game, and a couple of takeaways. I didn't think that Geno Smith was an abject disaster.
That's crazy.
For the reason that he was playing against 11 maniacs on defense. It was like playing against the Seahawks in Seattle. That's how the Bills came out frothing at the mouth with an unbelievable amount of intensity. And to me, any time the Bills take the field at home, they have the two best athletes on the field in Mario Williams and Kiko Alonso. That goes a long way. Kyle Williams is playing like a man possessed. Marcell Dareus has been, the last month and a half, possibly the best defensive tackle in football. Jairus Byrd is a top three safety.
I call him Jairus.
I know you do. this defense, I question whether they play with the same intensity on the road. But they have the makings of an elite defense.
I will say this. The Marcell Dareus hit on Geno Smith on the fourth play of the game. That, although you can't tell at the time, that essentially ended the game, because Geno Smith after that
wasn't the same.
He was down on the field for several minutes or a couple minutes and then missed the play, came back, and was completely gun-shy after that. But that's what this defense can do, especially that defensive line. There's some studs
I noticed there. That hit, too, and wondered why more wasn't made of it. I mean, Dareus just nailed him with his helmet right in the solar plexus, and Geno went down like he had to catch his breath for a minute or two.
Because the game was in Buffalo, that's why. People get lost there. It's like Kyle Williams has been one of the best defensive players in football the last, I'm not saying one of the top five, but he's been in the group of most consistent, and no one talks about Kyle Williams. He's been on a roll.
To hear Marshawn Lynch tell it, it's the Siberia of the NFL.
Wes, let's continue to cycle back through your history tab on your internet browser at home. What else did you watch on your day off?
I like the Ravens-Bears game. It's kind of a reminder that the bad weather is coming in the NFL, and this changes things. A lot of smart people believe Peyton Manning was a different quarterback in that playoff game in the loss than he was earlier in the year, that his arm wasn't the same, maybe he couldn't get the same grip on the ball. Weather will be a factor, and I think there's this faction of NFL fans that believes you should only play the game in pristine conditions, and it's a sin that the Raiders have a baseball field in the middle of the football field, and they shouldn't be playing in slop. I remember the Steelers-Dolphins monsoon game a few years back, and people were like, oh, that shouldn't count in the standings. It's not even football.
Shut up.
It's crazy. This is the way football should be played. I thought it was fun to watch. And this November comes calling. It's like the John Facenda music. You know, it's a different game now. All these pretty passing statistics from earlier in the year kind of go down the drain.
Right. Isn't this why some of these like 4-6 teams, like the Ravens or the Steelers, that are conditioned to playing in bad weather, aren't dead? Because, listen, the next 6-7 games are made for these teams.
And Ray Rice is a mutter.
Sunday night, yes, in Foxborough, low of 18 degrees overnight for Broncos Patriots. So any of that theory about Manning in the cold weather?
We'll see. I mean, maybe it has to be below 10 degrees or something. You never know.
And, Wes, you know how you have the navigation bar across the top here, and there's the arrow, and then you click down, and it shows everything you've been watching in your apartment? Anything else?
Parks and Recreation I've been watching.
No, he's keeping it G. I like it.
What?
PG.
But I'm just asking about what he's been watching. That's all.
Parks and Recreation. I watched a movie on Netflix at Mark Sessler's recommendation, The Long Goodbye.
Oh, okay. So now we're kind of getting off the football tip. But still, that's good
to
know.
I do have a life outside of football.
Unlike Mark,
not much
whose
of
son
one.
Comes to his face, Papa, and Mark's like, I want the Eagles to make it to the playoffs this year and go deep.
That is a mischaracterization of reality, but this is not actually real life, so let's rage on.
All right. Okay, before we go, we will, and thank you for that, Wes.
Hey, my pleasure.
I thought that was very informative. Before we go, we'll touch on the first game of Week 12, the Thursday night football game. A game that looked great in September or in August, and now it doesn't look so great. But we will talk about it. The New Orleans Saints head to Atlanta, the Georgia Dome, to face the Falcons.
Hey, look it. And Wes just, I loved what he just said about the cold weather.
Yes.
It's night. It's November. It's time. Oh, naturally, no matter where this is played, it's going to be in some 72-degree dome where the noise and the crowd is muted out on national TV. Snooze fest.
Huh.
Sorry, this is not
the
my type of game. I know,
domes.
And I know that Greg loves Falcons Saints primetime games.
He remembers my rant before week one of this season when I guaranteed that they would have a great game that would come down to the end because there's no better rivalry in terms of the quality of the games. And what happened? People don't remember, but it came down to the last play of the game. The Saints were very lucky to escape that game with a win. Matt Ryan was on the doorstep, so maybe we get a good game. How's that for being a good NFL employee?
That was back before Julio Jones was lost for the year.
The Saints aren't that good on the road, so maybe you know one of those last stand type games for the Falcons where they put up a fight. Matt Ryan's not playing very well right now. We don't even know if Tony Gonzalez is playing.
He's expected to.
Is he expected to play? All right.
They're probably the second worst team in the NFL right now.
They're giving up 11.
The
more
Bucks
points.
Smacked them around.
Yeah, and it's like week after week, they're getting worse.
They're going to beat some teams, though, in the second half.
The Bucs?
Yeah.
Maybe.
The Falcons have stopped being competitive. I agree with you. I think they're probably number 31 right now. That's sad.
All right, everybody. That is it for Wednesday's podcast. We will be back. We will discuss that game, which Greg has promised will go down to the final play, something 63-61, something like that it sounds like. We will also talk about the rest of the Week 12 games. And anything else that strikes us in the world of the NFL.
I want to say goodbye for four podcasts.
Wow. This is devastating. Where are you
going
to be?
I'm going back to Tybee Island, Georgia for Thanksgiving week. And I will miss two Fridays, a Sunday and a Wednesday. I will be available by phone call on Sunday and Wednesday, definitely. But I'll be flying on both Fridays.
Well, we will definitely we're going to get you on because that is not easy to deal with. We have this What's Wes Watching segment just getting off the ground, and now we got to table it. That's upsetting. But
it might be a different answer on what I'm watching by next week.
Yeah, we'll see. We will see. One other thing. Congratulations in order to the Dave Damashek football program. 5 million downloads?
Wow. 5 million.
Is that the statistic?
I think it's 500 million.
No, 5 million. We have reached 500 total.
So start downloading more.
But yes, Dave Damashek, congratulations. You are a mensch, as is said in his culture and yours, Greg.
Yeah, I was on a. Well, I'm not really in the culture. I was on a radio show this week that didn't know. You know, I was on a podcast, but they said they listened to Damashek all the time. And that's,
wow, that's an outrage.
I recommend that.
It's a great podcast. Congrats, Dave. All right, so that's it. We will be back. Signing off, this is Dan Hansis for The Mailman, The Boss, The Sizzler, K-Rich Behind the Glass, and Lyle, the ATL intern. Until Friday. Welcome back to another edition of the Around the League podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room... Ugh. Loser, piece of
Please keep that.